Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. As many of you may know, I'm currently on tour, so come see me. Tickets are available at everythingiconic.com. But the regularly scheduled Real Housewives recaps are on a bit of a hiatus while I'm on the road. So in the meantime, I do have a special interview episode for you all that I was so delighted to get to do before I left for tour. It's with a guy named R.L. Stein. Now, if you're a 90s kid like myself, you grew up reading the Goosebumps series. There have been a million of them, and getting to talk to the guy behind the Goosebumps series was such a thrill, so I hope you all enjoy this. I will put the video up on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Danny Pellegrino and the number one. As always, you can find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino. Please get my book. It's out on October 24th. It would really mean the world to me. There's also a Halloween chapter in the book, so if you're interested in getting it before spooky season, or while we're still in spooky season, you can get it, read that chapter, and then save the other Christmas and Thanksgiving chapters for later in the year. But it would really mean the world to me if you picked up The Jolliest Bunch in hardcover, or it's also available in audio on October 24th. Now, please enjoy my chat with R.L. Stein. Thank you to Acast. And one more Halloween programming note. I have a holiday movie podcast that I do with my friend Jenna, and we have a Halloween episode out that can be found on the podcast feed for A Very Merry Iconic Podcast. Love you all. Happy Halloween, and enjoy my chat with R.L. Stein.
You will be when you're in for a scare.
He's the author behind the beloved Goosebumps series. I have some of my Goosebumps books here today. R.L. Stein, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good.
I'm good. So excited. I'm sure you hear this all the time, but I'm a writer myself, and I can attribute so much of that to you because growing up, I was so obsessed with your Goosebumps series, and it really got me reading as a kid, and then also got me interested in writing and creative writing. So I just off the bat have to say thank you so much for that.
I was a bad influence on a lot of people.
I know. I think a good influence. And I'm also from Ohio. I'm from Northeast Ohio, and I know you're from Columbus.
What city?
Just outside of Cleveland, Solon, Ohio.
What? See, you. Why are you so reluctant to say the name?
I don't know. I'm nervous. I call you RL or should I call you
no,
Robert?
Bob. Everyone, okay. No one in my life ever called me RL. I think you have to live in Texas to be RL.
So I think I know this story, but maybe you could tell listeners, like, why did you decide to then go by RL for the books?
Well, I had been Jovial Bob Stein for years because I was funny and I did a humor magazine. And somehow Jovial Bob seemed inappropriate for scary stuff.
Sure.
So I was trying to think, what should I call myself? And at the time, S.E. Hinton was huge. She was very popular.
I'm wearing an S.E. Hinton shirt right now.
What a weird coincidence.
I know. That is so weird. The Outsiders.
Coincidence. And I thought, well, if I use my initials, people would think that I was a woman. And they would buy my books because everyone knows women read and men don't. Use my initials because of her. I can't believe you're wearing that shirt.
I know. Isn't that so, that is so strange when you said that? I'm.
Yes, right.
The Outsiders was also a book that I loved as a kid.
The Outsiders is coming to Broadway as a musical.
And what were some of the books when you were a kid that you really got you to take to reading? Who were the authors that you were inspired by? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I read only comic books. I was a comic book freak. And my friends and I would walk around carrying these big stacks of comics and we would read them under the tree in my front yard, and we would trade them and try to read them slowly to make them last. And when I was a kid, there were these incredible horror comics, the EC horror comics, Tales from the Crypt and The Vault of Horror. They were, oh, I loved them. They were gruesome, bloody, horrible comics, and they all had, every story had a twist ending. So you can see these comics were very influential on me. So for many years, that's all. I was into comic books. And then I guess when I was 9 or 10, my mom dropped me off at the little library on Main Street in my community. And the librarian was waiting for me. And she said, "Bobby, I know you like comic books, but I have something else I think you will like." And she took me to a shelf of Ray Bradbury stories. And those stories just changed my life. I couldn't believe them. They were so imaginative and so beautifully written and great endings. And just Ray Bradbury really turned me into a reader. Right. And I started reading him, and I started reading all kinds of science fiction then. Isaac Asimov and Robert Sheckley and all the people who were big science fiction writers at the time. But that that librarian, Henry Bradbury, really changed my life.
Yeah, librarians, I think, are so important and really can open our eyes. And especially as young people, I think we, the books we read as children are really the gateways into the books we'll continue reading as adults, or the work we want to do as adults. So I think I love librarians.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me how did the shift come then in terms of your career from doing, I know you did a lot of humor writing. You also even wrote for, I think, the Bazooka Gums, the Bazooka Joe gum jokes.
Some bubble gum jokes, yeah.
So how did you shift from that into scary?
$25 a joke.
Love it.
It's great. Great money.
So how did the shift happen?
Well, that's an embarrassing story. See, it's embarrassing because it wasn't my idea to be scary. It was somebody else's idea. And I never planned. I always enjoyed horror, but I never planned to write it. I was just funny. I was funny all the time. And one day I was having lunch with my friend Jean Fywell, who was the publisher at Scholastic. And she arrived at lunch angry. And she sat down. She had just had a fight with another author who wrote teen horror, who shall remain nameless, Christopher Pike. And she said, "I'm never working with him again. I'll bet you could write a good, scary book for teenagers. Go home, write a book called Blind Date." And I didn't know what she was talking about. What did she mean, a scary book for teenagers? I said, aye, sure thing. Now, because I always say yes to everything. Just always say yes.
Sure.
So I said, oh, no problem. I'll do that. And I ran right to the bookstore to find out what she was talking about. And I read books by Christopher Pike and Lois Duncan and Diane Ho and all these people who were writing teen horror just to find out what it was. But it's embarrassing it wasn't my idea. And then I wrote this book, Blind Date. It came out. It was a number one bestseller. Huh. Wait a minute. What's going on here? What is this? A year later, she asked me to do another one. I wrote a book called Twisted, another teen horror novel. And it was number one bestseller. And I thought, forget the funny stuff. I'm going to be scary. And I've been scary from then on.
Incredible.
Kids wanted to be scared. They didn't want the funny stuff.
You mentioned Lois Duncan, and your books really led me to Lois Duncan. It was sort of the opposite, because I started with Goosebumps, and then I remember reading I Know What You Did Last Summer, which was a Lois Duncan book and later a movie. Yeah. But that was sort of my gateway. I want to switch gears a little bit, because you have something on your resume that I was so surprised by. It was a show on Nickelodeon, I believe, called Eureka's Castle. You were the head writer for this show.
That's my whole TV career.
Okay, Bob, I need to know everything about Eureka's Castle, because as soon as I looked it up, I started seeing the imagery from it. And immediately it was almost in the recesses of my brain because I watched it every single day when I was really, really little because it was a show. I was the
one.
The bat and there. I mean, I loved it. So how did you get into Eureka's Castle? And also, is there anything you really remember from that time?
That was really fun. Eureka's, for people who don't remember it, Eureka's Castle was sort of like Sesame Street, only we didn't teach them anything. They didn't learn a thing. I think they lost IQ points every time they watched it. But it was live action things, little films, and like Sesame Street, and puppets, and wonderful puppets. The puppets were all trained by Jim Henson, the puppeteers, and they were just terrific. And it took place in a castle with Eureka, who was a wizard, and Batley, who incidentally was modeled after my son, Matt, who was a little kid at the time. And Matt used to come running into a room and fall on the floor and say, "I meant to do that." And I stole that from him and I used it in Batley.
Oh, man. I remember watching it every single day.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild. We did 100 episodes of Eureka's Castle. But unfortunately, that horrible purple dinosaur.
Barney.
Yes.
Oh, so Barney ended
and
up.
Stole the audience.
And oh, interesting.
Watching this horrible, bouncy purple puppet. And instead, you know, we're doing all this sophisticated, funny stuff. And they actually stole the audience. It was a shame.
Do you have any props from that show or any props or puppets or anything?
I have a blooper reel with the puppets all swearing.
My God.
You know, when they mess up, they would mess up and the puppets would, and they would all swear in character, which is really funny.
Wait, can you put that online somewhere? Can we watch that somehow?
No, absolutely not. No way.
Okay, take me to your writing routine. Do you follow any sort of routine throughout the day? I mean, you're still so prolific, but do you have a schedule?
I'm a machine.
I know you are a machine.
It's factory work. I'm still, Goosebumps is still going, you know, it's 31 years old. Why is it still going?
They're good.
We're actually doing a new Goosebumps series starting this month called Goosebumps House of Shivers. All new stories, new cover artists. We're refreshing it. But I work every day from like 10 to 1. Those are good hours, right?
Right.
3 hours a day, those are good hours. I try to write 2,000 words a day.
Okay.
And I have a little game with myself. I sit down, I write in the morning, and when I hit 2,000, I quit, no matter where I am. Middle of a sentence, no matter what. I do my 2,000 words. And then I come back the next day and ready to go again.
Has there been a concept that you've wanted to tackle in one of the Goosebumps books that you haven't figured out how to or been able to incorporate into one of the Goosebumps books?
Well, not really. I think I've done everything you can do.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I don't think there's any stories left. Here's a couple things with Goosebumps. One is I have this great title that they won't let me use.
What is it? Can you tell me?
The title is Morons from Mars.
And they don't want to use it because moron? Is that
Yeah, that's a great Goosebumps title, right?
I think so.
And the editor there said, "I'm sorry, you'll offend the morons."
Yeah.
Hard, because words in different contexts aren't offensive.
And I think the hope is that the reader also has the critical thinking skills to understand that.
Yeah, they've gone too far, I think. Mark Brown and I have a new picture book out. Mark, you know, does Arthur the Aardvark, called Why Did the Monster Cross the Road? And it's about two monsters, Honey and Funny. And I started the book out. It says, Honey and Funny are monsters. Honey is small and Funny is big. And the editor said, we're trying to get away from size comparisons.
It's hard.
One be orange and one be green. And I said, no. I said, no. One is big and one is little.
Ever since I saw Clueless, I wanted to have the most amazing wardrobe, and that includes all of the clothes inside the wardrobe closet, and that's why I'm excited to talk to you about Quince. Now, Quince has you covered with truly timeless pieces that never go out of style. You'll have them in your closet forever. Quince has all sorts of must-haves. I'm talking Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50. I have a blue cashmere crew neck sweater I got from them that I get so many compliments on all the time. I love it. Plus iconic 100% leather jackets and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes us savings all over to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Love that. Makes you feel good about shopping with Quince. Again, I've gotten a lot of stuff there. Just good quality pieces and a lot of different options if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe. So indulge in the affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/iconic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/iconic to get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/iconic. What are the rules of a Goosebumps book? I know the books tend to end on cliffhangers, but are there any other rules that you go into with those books?
Here are the rules. No hugging, no crying.
Interesting. And have you broken those rules ever?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think I have. No hugging, no crying.
And why? So why would those be rules?
What I hate most about TV shows and horror shows for kids, they're always hugging and crying.
Yeah, a little too earnest.
Yeah, a little too much emotion.
Because it takes away from the scare, I would imagine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I have other, you know, I'm being silly.
Yeah.
I'm being silly. I have no real world problems. It's no drug related problem. Nothing ever relates. No divorce.
Mm.
Nothing real that's going to ruin the, you know, Goosebumps readers have to know the book is a fantasy, that it couldn't happen. And right. So I try to keep real life out of it as much as possible. And if you do that, you can get pretty scary.
There have been so many adaptations. Of course, there were the two feature films. I remember the series from, I believe it was the 90s, that I remember so well. And now there's a new Disney Plus Hulu show. Out of all the, sort of the adaptations, which one do you like the best? Is there one that you feel best captures sort of the essence of your writing?
I've been so lucky. I think I've been really lucky that most of the stuff has been good.
Yeah.
The original TV series was really well done. You know, I was doing a Goosebumps book a month at the time. So I couldn't really be very involved in the TV show. And we had these two guys who just got it. They got it that it was funny and scary. And they just did a great job. And the two Goosebumps movies with Jack Black playing me. Jack and I are like twins, right?
I mean, how incredible to have him play you.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was wonderful. But I had very little input in that movie, those two movies, and they turned out to be really good. So yeah. I've been lucky. I've had a few things I haven't liked very much, but overall, most of people, the adaptations have been terrific.
You know, in my research, I found that you did a Goosebumps CD-ROM with Steven Spielberg and Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, an early video game.
Which is crazy.
Steven Spielberg picked the cast out. Isabella Rossellini was in it. Jeff Goldblum. They spent a fortune on it.
Oh.
It was the first video game that you could go around 360 degrees. You could go around and see what was behind you and what was all over the place. And they just, you know, it was very hard. I never finished it. And it never got to the end.
Very advanced technology, too, that we're doing at that time.
It was.
Okay, I know I'm getting really in the weeds here, so I apologize. But, you know, this was my favorite book, the Say Cheese and Die. This was the one that I remember just being obsessed with as a child.
Yes. But
I want to know what your favorite is. And then I'm also curious about some of the design stuff, which we'll get to. But do you have a favorite or a couple that really spring to mind?
I have a couple, but I usually, when people ask me what's my favorite, I usually give a different answer each time. It's hard to have a favorite. My best Halloween book is The Haunted Mask.
I have that one behind me somewhere.
You know, with Carly Beth, who wants to be scary at Halloween time and tries on that mask and then can't get it off. It sticks to her face and it turns her evil. And that's my best Halloween story, I think. And that's one of the better. It was also, that was the very first Goosebumps TV show that we did. And it was really well done.
Yeah, I just rewatched it in preparation for this, because it's on Netflix. You can watch that original series. And The Haunted Mask is a two-parter. And it is genuinely scary and fun. But you
really good. And all Canadian.
My design question.
The Goosebumps TV show was totally a Canadian production. Okay. We shot it at an old Molson brewery in Toronto. Oh. So if you watch, by the way, Say Cheese and Die, that TV show has 11-year-old Ryan Gosling in it.
Amazing.
We used every kid in Canada.
Amazing. I wonder if that's why I liked it as a kid, that book, so much. Yeah. Maybe.
If you watch Werewolf of Fever Swamp, it's down in the Everglades in Florida, and they all have Canadian accents. It's wonderful.
I love that. You know, I'm just having this flashback. I might have talked about this on my show before, but I used to love the Scholastic Book Fair when we would get the magazines in class, and I would circle what I would hope to get or what I wanted to get if I had the money. And I just remember around the holidays that I would be so excited to see. I think you had a Snowman Goosebumps book around Christmas time. And I would get so excited to know that there were kind of a Halloween themed one or a Christmas themed Goosebumps book. I just loved that as a kid. I was having a flashback to that. But I mentioned the design. And so I'm curious how involved you were, but also how sort of like the slime and the design of the title came about, because it's so memorable, you know, so iconic.
That was the art department.
Yeah, so they presented it to you.
The logo and the look of it was all the art department.
Okay.
Our original cover artist was Tim Jacobus, and he did about the first 100 covers. He did 100 cover paintings, and those are the ones you remember, I think. Of course, I was busy writing. I had writing a book a month. A few weeks, I got to turn it out. So I wouldn't have the book finished when it was time for him to do the cover. And I would just send a paragraph, just be a little paragraph, and tell him what the book was about. And he got it right. Then he would do a painting, and he got it right every time, except that book you were talking about, Say Cheese and Die.
And well, he didn't get that one right.
The book is about an evil camera that takes pictures in the future of bad things that are going to happen. And Tim sent that cover in. You can look at it. It's a photo of a family of skeletons barbecuing. It has nothing to do with the book. It's the only time that ever happened. And of course, the editors called me then and they said, Bob, can you add a scene of skeletons barbecuing? Because, you know, God forbid Tim should have to change the painting, right? So I added a dream sequence where the kid's dreaming about skeletons barbecuing.
The
cover would make sense.
I love that. I want to shift gears a little bit to Fear Street, which is another one of your series, which was adapted and made into these three Netflix movies, I think, over the past couple of years, and I thought they were great. I really loved them. And I'm curious, do you know if there will be more of the Fear Street coming?
Well, can you keep a secret?
Maybe. Let's see.
Is anyone listening?
No one's listening.
No one's listening?
No one's here.
Three more.
Okay, three more movies. Okay,
good. You didn't hear it from me.
Okay. I was hopeful.
I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Okay, good. I was really hopeful.
You got to wait till after the strike.
Right, right.
We were quite successful. We killed a lot of teenagers, didn't we?
Did, yeah. And the movies turned out really well. I remember I watched all three of them when they were coming out on Netflix, and I just thought they were great.
Success. All three were number one on Netflix.
Right.
That was pretty amazing. I was amazed.
You've had so much incredible success. And what would you tell that young Robert back in Ohio growing up? What would you say to him now if you had a chance to talk to him? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess. I people ask me that, and here's my joke, okay? I always say, Bob, when 2008 comes around, get out of the stock market.
Right.
I'm not doing
good
that.
Advice.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. What would I tell myself? I'm 9 years old. I'm in my room typing already. I would just, keep at it, Bob.
Keep at it.
Got to work out pretty well.
And do you think you ever will retire, or are you?
Don't ask that. I hate that question.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Kids
sorry.
Ask that. Now, no one used to ask me that question. I think I got a letter from a kid who said, and when you die, can someone in your family take over the books? Love that.
Yeah, people don't want to say goodbye.
Authors don't retire, don't they? You just drop dead on your keyboard. Right?
I don't ever want you to retire. No, I'm glad. I don't ever want that to happen. And
what else would I do all day?
I know. Is there a story in you that you want to tell, maybe outside of the scary stuff or just anything in general? Is there a book that you would love to write that you haven't?
Yeah. No, I'm lucky. I've done everything I want. I love getting to do funny books still. I did three Garbage Pail Kids books recently just for fun, That was fun. And we have to mention Stein Tingler's too,
Right.
This book just came out. These are 10 all new short stories.
In a hardcover too, which I think is super special.
But they're all new short stories. And I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. And what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people when they think of your work and you as a person, sort of what do you want that to be?
Oh, I don't know. For many years, I thought, it would say, my tombstone would say, he got boys to read. That was a pretty good accomplishment. But I don't, you don't want to leave out the girls.
Sure. But I think.
That's what, seriously, people always say, what kind of job is that? Terrifying kids. You scare kids for a living. But it's, it's all about getting kids to read. My whole career has been reading motivation and showing you don't have to stare at a screen. You can pick up a book and be totally entertained by it and not have to learn anything or grow or anything. Just be entertained by a book. And that's really what my whole career has been about, to be serious.
Yeah. And I think reading opens up your imagination in a way that's really important. And that's what your books did for me as a young child and made me want to explore sort of different worlds or create worlds in my head. And
it's all happening in your head. It's not on a screen. It's not on, a computer. It's all happening right inside your head.
And I think one of the things that gets lost with reading now is it is so important, I believe, for empathy. I think when you read a book and you are putting yourself into the character's shoes because you're having to imagine these worlds in your head, I think it helps you understand people in different ways that you might not have thought to try to understand them before if it's a character that you would not normally be introduced to, if that makes any sense.
No, that's a very good point. You're outside yourself.
Right. Okay, so anything else you want to tell us about what's coming next? I know you have Stein Tingler's 2 coming out. You have the Disney Plus Hulu series. There's so much going on.
Oh, and the new Goosebumps House of Shivers is coming this fall. And I'm doing graphic horror novels for adults.
Oh, that's exciting.
A new thing. Yes, these are really gory, like the old horror comics when I was a kid. They're called Stuff of Nightmares. And I'm doing them for Boom Studios in L.A. And there are two more coming out this fall, and they're really gruesome.
Oh, I can't wait to read them.
Oh, yes.
You must get asked all the time for you to write people's names in your book. Do you get that a lot? Probably everyone asks you.
Not recently. We've done a lot of contests where school auctions, where there got to be a character in the book. But I haven't done it recently. We did that a lot.
Because I would imagine that probably is one of the hardest things with your books is coming up with names all the time. Because
When I started Goosebumps, my son Matt was still in school, and I had his school directory. And I used just about every kid. I used every kid in his school. I just went down the list and used their names. Because, right. You know, I made it so hard for myself. Every book starts all over again with a whole new cast of characters. There's no repeating.
And do you like when you pick up a series, so something like Slappy or a character, do you like writing them again? Do you prefer that? Or do you like kind of leaving it?
I can't believe we almost made it through this conversation without mentioning Slappy.
Sorry about that, Bob. Sorry, I had to mention him.
No, Slappy he's my favorite character and my least favorite character. And I mean, talking about, I've had to write 15 books about Slappy, about a dummy coming to life and no one knows it. That's a lot. It got really hard to come up with plots. You know, I even killed him off in one book. The ghost of Slappy, but I had to bring him back.
Well, do you think he'll be back again at some point? I'm sure, right?
Yeah, right. He was so popular in the movies, you know, yeah. We had to do him.
What advice do you have for parents out there who might be having trouble getting their kids to read, or they want their kids to pick up a book, whether it be Goosebumps or something else? Do you have any advice for parents?
Yeah, I don't have very interesting advice. But my advice is let them pick out what they want. Don't try to force them to read anything.
Right.
It doesn't work. Let them choose and don't put down what they choose. My son, Matt, his claim to fame is that he never read a Goosebumps book.
Oh, my God. He's never read one?
No. Isn't that horrible?
That is horrible.
He knew how to make me crazy. Right. He knew. But he read only Garfield comics his whole childhood. That's all he read. He had every collection. And every night he's in his bed reading Garfield comics. And then he went off to college and he was an English major.
Wow.
So go figure. It worked out.
I remember those Garfield collections. They were landscape mode. And
yes,
so
yes, he had them all. Right.
Yeah. I have to let you go, but I just want to, again, just say thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. Your work has meant so much to me and so many people around the world. And so just thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Danny.
It's horror, but it so creatively opened my mind and brain when I was a child and helped me escape from maybe hard times, which I'm sure you hear of that a lot too. Kids who are going through rough family situations or personal things and being able to escape in one of your books without those sort of real world things, I think is probably so helpful for so many. And it just was so, you inspired me so much. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Hey, I really enjoyed talking with you.
It truly my pleasure. And if you want to name a character Danny Pellegrino, go for it. I would love it. And
Be good or bad?
I'd take either. Any of your writing, I'd take either. But I think bad would be fun.
We'll keep it in mind.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Okay, terrific.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Again.
This episode of Everything Iconic is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues.
your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. Now, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. You all know I've been struggling a little bit. I usually love the springtime, but I struggle with my allergies, which are just not the most fun. But luckily with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, the only tissues I like to use, I can say, bring on the blooms, and I can face those allergies head on. Now, Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. That's why I love these, because they're so incredibly soft, and I don't want to touch my nose with something that's not. Now, I am obsessed with Kleenex. I think they are so really just the best to do it. So for this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Again, this allergy season, do not pick up something else. Grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Fresh game.